All right, now, in addition to changing the way in which we live and work and engage with one another, the current coronavirus pandemic has also shone a light on our relationship with government. The power that we as citizens have afforded government since the dawn of democracy has been used to institute various levels of lockdown, including, of course, curfews and bans, in an attempt to flatten the curve and curb the spread of coronavirus. But those efforts haven't been without criticism. And as my next guest writes in his recent Mail and Guardian article, the pressure of these unusual times has necessitated us to rethink our politics and our social contract with the government and with another. Paul Kariuki is the Executive Director of the Democracy Development Partnership the Democracy Development Programme in Durban, and joins me now to discuss how we can improve the partnership between citizens and the state to better manage the pandemic. A very good morning to you, Paul. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, and good morning to all your listeners.
Listen, so your article lists the important lessons that we've learnt as citizens and as a nation these past few months, essentially discussing how to reprioritise the social contract between government and its people. But where do we start?
Well, we start firstly by having such conversation like the one we have now, where we involve everybody's voice in managing such a serious public health emergency. For better part of its management, the voices of those who are truly affected, which is ordinary citizens, has been not been involved in helping to shape the interventions and at the same time the policy making processes that will help the government to manage this pandemic better. It has just been a very much top-down kind of a situation, and maybe that had a part of it in the initial stages, while the rest of us were trying to understand what is this invisible enemy we are fighting. But as months progress, I think there has been, and there's still room for engagement with citizens and understanding how best can we flatten the curve from community point of view and grow it up. And that takes a lot of effort, but it's a necessary intervention.
What have been the biggest failings of the government in its handling of the pandemic thus far, in your opinion, and anything that you think government's gotten right?
I wouldn't say there is a failing, because I don't think there was anyone all over the world who was prepared to handle the pandemic as it emerged. But I think I would rather look at it as a way of strengthening the intervention from a point of view saying that it's not just one sector of our society that has all the answers. It's important that we bring other voices and include them in finding out possibilities. So I think for me, from my point of view, there has been some level of engagement, but it's not sufficient enough to the extent that it does not bring every voice that needs to be heard onto the table in terms of policy making. And some of the structures that have been established to inform decision making on how the government responds to this pandemic have really lacked the voice of ordinary people in those representation of those structures. And so that's my point of view. There has been a great steps taken to manage the pandemic. There has been lessons learned in between, as some of the interventions have failed or seems to be failing, but there is still room to do more. And I think that's what I would like to emphasize with my article, that there is room to be involved, and there is room to make things work better, and there is room to strengthen interventions based on evidence that we are now encountering.
So you say that we're not hearing enough voices, enough diverse voices, and you mentioned that the voice of ordinary people. Who else? Who else do we need to hear from?
Well, as you probably know, there are very many various structures at a community level that do represent the interests of ordinary people at the household level, for example. So the voices of structures such as community-based health care workers, those should be voices that should be informing medical interventions around managing the pandemic at community level.
Yeah.
The voices of ward committee members, those are people who know which household has serious situation going on, and perhaps has not been captured by the health systems around the area. So such structures should be given a voice. We should also be talking, for example, to those welfare organizations who knows which households are actually going without food. We have been reading over the media for the last couple of months of food parcels finding ways, into other people's pockets, and those that are nearly needed do not get. That is not a process, in my view, that can be handled by government alone. But if you do not involve structures at the community level that do know who is hungry in our area.
We seem to have lost Dr. Paul Kariuki there. Paul, are you there? Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, you can. Okay, super. Yes. Apologies. All right. Listen, I mean, at the start of the pandemic, at the very start of lockdown, I think after that, the first speech by the president, his sort of popularity rating was all right. People said that they felt confident in what he was saying. But that quickly dwindled, to become almost a sort of adversarial them and us situation between citizens and government. And since then, there hasn't been a great deal of rhetoric around, yes, the government is doing well. It just seems to have been getting worse and worse. What are their blind spots? What is government not seeing that we are requesting and that we need as citizens, and how do we get them back on, get government back on focus?
So firstly is to understand that regulations and laws do not turn around people's moral behavior. So more lockdowns and more bans and more curfews do not really impress people to turn their way of thinking and their behavior. At this point in time where we are with the levels of increasing incidences, it's the best time to appeal to people's moral consciousness. Yeah, we should be doing mass public education around the virus itself, for example, as one way to appeal to people's moral consciousness. We haven't done sufficient of those. And there is assumption that everybody has a TV to watch and has a radio to listen to. But there are other means that should be employed to increase the level of awareness about the disease itself, the way it is mutating at the moment. And this should be done on an ongoing basis so that you can we can say sufficiently that there is enough dissemination of information. And we have a good case to learn from. For example, a couple of years ago, when we had this HIV and AIDS pandemic at its peak, like what we're experiencing now, The Treatment Action Campaign, one of the biggest campaigns they were doing was mass public education around HIV and AIDS, so that the public will get to a place where behavioral change happens because of constant hearing of the same information repeatedly. I don't think we've done that enough. So that's one, if we want to term it as a blind spot, that's one of those that we have not done. And then the other part, of course, is to really emphasize not so much on regulations and laws around movements and the restriction of social interaction, but really more to do with that part of saying to people, behavioral communication is important. It starts with you as a person. If you do not do the basics right, then there's possibility that you can be a transmitter, and you can be, you of course, exacerbating the situation from one place to the next. And so I think for me, that is what should be happening this point in time, because there is so much to do with the way people, the public in this sense, does respond to the basic requirements of managing personal hygiene and etiquette in the public.
But Paul, I mean, would it be fair to say that with the Treatment Action Campaign, that was the government was given a great deal more notice than they have been with the coronavirus pandemic? And yes, of course, public awareness is hugely important. But the timeframes, when you look at those two crises, are very different.
Yes, the timeframes are very different. However, the mechanisms should be the same. So what, for example, in this public emergency situation right now, what should be happening is like double of those efforts or even triple of those efforts in terms of mass education. There is not sufficient of those. And in my view, that is one way where we can start seeing a change in people's behavior. We have heard senior public leaders making comments in national TV and other media outlets that there is, even though there has been progress in terms of people wearing masks and washing their hands and all those things that are needed to be done, they're still saying there is a concern that not everybody everywhere is doing that. What does that say? It says there is still insufficient information about how this pandemic can be stopped and how is it spreading. And one of those things is really to increase public education.
One of the things that I thought was interesting in the article was that you were saying that, you know, the pandemic has shown the ability to protect citizens from a pandemic doesn't necessarily depend on wealth. And you say that that other countries some countries who are very wealthy haven't dealt with it very well. Other countries where they don't have quite such a fruitful economy have dealt with the virus well. Where are we? I mean, the economics of government and citizens seems to have played a key role in South Africa in how the pandemic has played out thus far. Certainly, our conversations around the country's economy and citizens. The wealth or not of citizens. So, I mean, how has that played out, do you think? And in your opinion, how will investing, you speak about preventative medicine and that empowering citizens to work together, how will that do that? How will investing in preventative medicine empower citizens to work together?
So preventative medicine essentially tries to make sure that people do not fall ill in the first place, right, as a basic premise. So what this means is that if we involve citizens right from the beginning at the grassroots level, we'll be able to encourage not only just participation but also decision-making that will influence policy conversations around what needs to work and what is not being what is not working will be easily identified and be changed as the interactions continue. So from a preventative medicine point of view, if we, for example, bring this conversation to a community level where we say we involve community healthcare workers, yeah, we're able to work with them in a way that they will be able to say what we are not able to capture from formal spaces, for example, in academic or research institutions, where, yes, work is happening there, men and women dedicated to continuously research and provide information of how the pandemic is going, give us models, help us understand the mutation and all those. But at the grassroots level, that's where people are at the coalface of the disease itself. So when we involve structures like community healthcare workers, community social workers, who are dealing with the psychological effects of the pandemic at the community level, then we are able to shape the intervention. And therefore, the moral behavior that we're talking about, the moral change that we want to talk about that appeals to individuals at the point of consciousness, as at a personal level, then that will be even more possible because now we are talking to the right structures that interact with people daily at the place where it hurts the most. So therefore, then from that premise, then you can see where the preventative medicine comes in. Then you are able to protect as many people from getting ill in the first place because they're able to interact with decision-making process where it touches them most. But if they are receiving information from, you know, some national government office or a department, the conversation at community level is that, no, that's not our disease, that's disease for rich people, you know, those kind of things that go around there. Mm-hmm. But when it hits home, they see a neighbor suffering, and then there is a community healthcare worker there, and there is a community social worker there who is interacting with them, this is what we should be doing often to prevent the situation to get in there. I believe there will be more greater results in terms of reducing the spread compared to curative medicine, where we start intervening when people are already ill.
I want to go to a WhatsApp that's come in. Government should have made it law to wear a mask and to wear it properly. In Obs, where I live, lots of people, a lot of them foreigners, says Jenny in Obs, don't wear them. They are friends visiting, no social distancing in the street, business as usual. It's very scary and there's an unbelievable arrogance. I don't go out unless I have to. Not surprising that we keep on having more infections. Much too much rot and old wood in government with few consequences. And Cyril seems to want to please everyone. Lots of people have lost respect for him, says Jenny in Obs. Paula, very much enjoyed your article, and I would encourage you to please read Dr. Paul Kariuki's article, which is in the Mail and Guardian, titled A Partnership Between Citizens and the State is Needed to Manage the Pandemic. Thanks very much indeed for your time this morning, Paul.
Thank you very much for having me on this.
Absolute pleasure. If you would like to read Dr. Paul Kariuki's article, then get yourself to mg.coza. A partnership between citizens and the state is needed to manage the pandemic, he writes.